This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Friday as we welcome you into this cross-country edition of Money Moves. JVT's out in Vegas as usual. Stormy Bonantoni here live from the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. I'm doing my best Dave Ross impression today. I was working the Orange Bowl yesterday in Miami, and instead of flying back home to Vegas for a day and then coming out here to the Nashville area for the FCS title game on Monday, just made the trip easy and came straight to the studio out here that's nearby. And I gotta say, Dave Ross has some nice digs, JVT. This is a sweet spot.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing well. From what I understand, it's a technological adventure for all of you out there getting that thing set up and ready to go all the way down to printing paper. So I'm at least glad we're on the air, and I am looking forward to our show today.
Well, I didn't realize, and I knew I had heard that Dave Ross was kind of like a lone wolf out here, but there's two really big rooms up in front of the sportsbook here. And he is just in here alone. He handles everything. I am endlessly impressed with all of the work that he does on this program. Like, we need to give him a raise. Steve Cohen, listen up. Dave Ross deserves a raise.
And yet he still, I think, has not improved in terms of handling technology. So I do wonder if maybe at some point it'll stick for our guy.
We're trying our best here. I walked in and all of the printouts were here. I've got to say, give him all the kudos in the world. By the way, Dave Ross will be joining us on the program today. As he helped me set up the studio, I'm also putting him to work from the content side. So with that in mind, let's set the table for everything we've got to come over the course of the next 2 hours here on Money Moves. It's time for the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
So Dave is going to join us in about 30 minutes or so. We're going to get into a little college football playoff talk. He's got thoughts on the NFL card coming up for week 18, as I can't believe we're finally here, final week of the NFL regular season. And in about 15 minutes, Mike Palm going to join us in his usual Friday spot. He's got a lot of CFP thoughts as well as some talk in the NHL, because I don't know if you saw this, JVT, but the Olympic rosters are set and he's got some opinions on Team USA.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what he has to say about the college football playoffs specifically, as we have this issue with the byes. We have these teams that are being upended. Indiana looks like a power, so very much looking forward to seeing what looks like a really new and interesting semifinal. When we're talking about the four teams there, what Mike has to say. And if we have time, there is a UFC card at the end of this month that I am very interested in, and I want to see if Dave's got some early thoughts on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Dave, also the host of the First Strike podcast. If you didn't already know, now you know. Mention it being week 18 in the NFL. A handful of really interesting games, but the big ones in primetime. We've got a doubleheader coming up tomorrow with the Panthers and Bucks, who are going to duel it out for the NFC South. We will preview that game at length. Also, the one seed on the line in the NFC West. With the Seahawks and 49ers. Seattle, a short 1.5-point favorite there. And Sunday night, Ravens Steelers putting an exclamation point not only on the season as a whole, but for either the Ravens or Steelers as their season will be done.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of news today, too. Players who are playing, those who are not, some clarity on some quarterback situations. And actually, to invoke our buddy one more time, Dave Ross, some interesting news coming out of Dallas as to what the Cowboys might do with Dak Prescott in this game. So there's a lot of information to sift through as we get closer to week 18.
Yeah, you mentioned some of those quarterbacks, though. Lamar Jackson says he will 100% play. Yep. Yeah, we haven't seen that line move. Ravens still 3.5-point favorites. So we'll get into that and more in a bit. Also, we talk about the college football playoff. We're going to have lots of college football on deck today, including one game that's in action right now. Texas State up 7-0 on Rice in the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl. The final of the non-CFP bowls going on today. We've got a quartet of the action there. But also, of course, the college football playoff semifinals officially being set now that the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day quarterfinals are in the book. So we will preview the Fiesta Bowl as Miami is a 3-point favorite against Ole Miss, and the Peach Bowl, Oregon and Indiana going head-to-head, a battle for the Raiders' next starting QB, Fernando Mendoza and Dante Moore. That'll be a fun one for sure. Fernando, after the performance yesterday, out to -220 to be the number one overall pick now.
Yeah, I would say, at least in terms of that specifically, I'm going to think that Dante Moore maybe closes the gap a little bit in terms of the probability of being the first overall pick by the time we get to evaluation season for both of these guys. But wildly impressive for Mendoza yesterday in terms of what he was able to do, both just statistically and physically. You see some of those throws, Stormy, some impressive NFL-level throws that led Indiana to an absolute blowout of Alabama yesterday. I've been wildly impressed with Mendoza. Even go back to the Big Ten championship game, on the surface, a minimal stat line, but PFF in that game gave him a passing grade over 90. He had three amazing throws in that game as well. And this team, as you zoom out and look at Indiana, they are now the favorite to win everything, and they should be. They look like the best team in college football, which is a wild thing to say, even given what we've known about this program for about a year now. Man, it is wild to see a world in which the Hoosiers are the best football program in the country.
I mean, it was wild already just seeing the number one next to their name facing a team like Alabama, just considering the history between these two programs. You mentioned it, though, the top of the odds board for them when it comes to winning a national title, plus 135, that price. Oregon and Miami both sit at 3-1, and then Ole Miss, a plus five favorite, the longest shot on the board. But just to go back to the Indiana of it all, 38-3, your final. The Tide's 35-point loss, their worst postseason loss in program history. We have never seen that in the postseason from a Crimson Tide team. Meanwhile, for Indiana, I wrote this in our Run-Up Crazy Stat. Their first bowl win of any kind since the 1991 Copper Bowl. Absolutely insane, but kudos to them on what has been a tremendous season, a historic season, and will they keep it rolling? One of the big things and talking points, and you already mentioned it already, the buys and how impactful that has been for a handful of teams, not Indiana. They are the only one that has seemed to break that trend. Seven of the eight teams that have had a first-round bye have lost their opening game. The five highest-ranked conference champs we know are also guaranteed spots in the playoff each year. Nine of the 10 conference champions have lost their first games here. Indiana, the only exception to those rules.
Yeah, and I feel like this conversation deserves a little bit more context, and I'll give you credit. We had you on. We were talking about this. I don't know if it was the day you were in studio or if we were just talking to you about this, but, you know, these buys, you go back to last year. I don't know if we're freaking out too much. I honestly think, Stormy, we're using a four-game sample size, which is this year. So, look, 1-3 straight up and against the spread when you look at it, but last year you go back, Boise State, plus 11. They were an underdog. They lost that game 31-14. Arizona State was a 13.5-point underdog. They lost in overtime 39-31. Oregon was a 2.5-point underdog to Ohio State, the game you were on the sidelines for. They got smoked 41-21. And then Georgia, that was about a 1-point underdog. Also a weird game as well. You had the tragedy in New Orleans. The game get pushed back, and they lose to Notre Dame 23-10. I don't know if last year, and then zooming out and using both seasons, I don't know if you're using those as this measuring tool of like, see, these buys, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. The format's an issue. I think that you're probably looking at this year and saying, okay, let's move forward from here and see if it's going to be a problem if we don't expand here. But I think it's somewhat short-sighted to include last year when the format changed because we had such big dogs in that first round.
Yeah, because the first round, the top four seeds were not actually the top four best teams in college football, right? It was a different situation there. But you mentioned expansion. I think that's going to happen. I think we're going to 16 next year already. That's been in the works for a while. It seems like that's what the committee wants to do. And then you're not going to have to worry about this regardless. But let's stick with what's going on this year. And if you didn't stay up last night, you missed a freaking banger between Ole Miss and Georgia as well, with Trinidad Chambliss putting the team on his back late in this game. The 40-yard completion that sets up the game-winning field goal. The chaos even at the end of the game with the 1 second left on the clock, and the Sugar Bowl crew that sets up the stage for the post-game trophy presentation has to come out, put the stuff out there, bring it back out. It was all chaos on the field and off. 39-34, Ole Miss gets it done. Over the team, JVT, I want to give you credit here. We both liked Georgia to win it all this year, but the other day when I was on with you and we're like, who ruins the money line parlay? That was the last thing you said before I got off the air was, what if we have a couple? And you said Georgia could be one of them.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was based on kind of a little bit of a hunch more than anything else. But what were the things we were talking about leading up to the game last night? It was despite a vast majority of the people you would talk to telling you that this was essentially a victory for Georgia, that we were moving them on to the semifinals, that Ole Miss was not a team that could win a national championship. This line didn't move, didn't get up to 7. In fact, at some spots during our show yesterday, Stormy, while you were on the air, got to 5.5 multiple times. And then you watch this, where all of a sudden a Georgia team that statistically had struggled with its pass defense throughout the year, all of a sudden was struggling with its pass defense against Trinidad Chambliss and the Ole Miss Rebels, a team that had been inconsistent on offense, all of a sudden was inconsistent at times on offense. And Gunnar Stockton, who doesn't really look like a true drop-back quarterback at times, was scuffling around with the way that he was throwing the ball as well. Everything that we kind of knew about Georgia, despite some of the improvements that they had shown, it all showed up in this game against Ole Miss. So kudos to Ole Miss for getting this done. But, you know, you just had this feeling. There were so many people that had chalked this up to a win for Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I think I was among them. I even told Kelly, like, I think I'm paralysis by analysis here. I like Georgia. I think they win the national championship. But this kind of something stinks here. And sure enough, that led. By the way, really quickly, how about this unique beat? Because this was brought up yesterday. Imagine the poor fools who had a 10-point teaser and decided to use Georgia and tease them up to 4. And guess what? Plus 4, you still lost out on that 39-34 because of that final game, that final play. What a way to lose something. Yep.
And if you were trying to get involved and, like, play Georgia live in the game, too, when you had opportunities. I know a lot of people were posting their clips of bad beats for that as well. It's a result I don't think a lot of people anticipated, including the folks over at LSU, because now we've got this whole back and forth about what's going to happen with Lane Kiffin's assistants, because for anybody who doesn't know the calendar particularly well, the transfer portal opens today, and 6 coaches on the Ole Miss staff are supposed to be at LSU now, including offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss, who, by the way, according to reports, already made the trip out there to Baton Rouge to get some work done. And there's a lot of confusion, I guess, on both sides of this thing about who is going to coach, if all of them, or if they're supposed to be back in Baton Rouge. I think the expectation was, okay, yeah, of course, we're going to be the good people and let you guys coach, with the expectation they would lose. And now we're in a very precarious situation, potentially.
No, Lane Kiffin's such a good guy. There's no way that he would keep them away from coaching a team to a potential national championship game. I don't think there's any problem here whatsoever. I'm sure they're all going to be 100% focused on Ole Miss's run.
Oh, chaos. We love it. We also still have to get into the game that I was on yesterday a little bit as well. And I've got some questions for Mike Palm, who's going to join us coming up next out there in Vegas with JVT. Stick around. We are just getting started here on Money Moves.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, football meets flavor with VSiN and Omaha Steaks, the official sponsor of tailgating. And right now, when you spend $129, you can score 2 pounds of fully cooked chicken wings plus 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com/VSiN. Don't wait. Spend $129. Get 2 pounds of wings. Save 50% site-wide on steaks and more at omahasteaks.com/VSiN. That's omahasteaks.com/VSIN. Minimum purchase may be applied. See site for details.
Stormy Bonantoni out there on the East Coast. Jonathan Von Tobel back here in Sin City. And with me in his usual Friday spot off last week for Christmas, Mike Palm, who is nice enough to give us some time here on a Friday as usual. Sir, hello. How are you?
John, how are you? Stormy, hello there from Kentucky. I want to start and I want to ask Stormy a question.
Go ahead.
Stormy, who makes the decision that you're going to be on the Texas Tech sideline and Katie George is going to be on the Oregon side? Who makes?
Do you? I know the answer to this question.
Do you have input in that decision? Is there a producer that makes this? How is that determined?
The lead sideline reporter will get that decision. So I was joining Katie's crew. Joe Tessitore and Jesse Palmer are her usual crew. So she got to pick which sideline she wanted to do.
Well, that was very obvious because Jesse Palmer, who I'm not sure he took a breath the whole game, was very effusive in thanking his crew and all the things they got. No mention of Stormy at all at the end of the broadcast.
No,
oh, that's
just
not
talking
true
about
at all.
Go back and listen to it. I was very attentive to it. I said, not even throw in and thank Stormy for joining us. Nothing from The Bachelor. Nothing.
That's not true at all. And even Joe Tess, after my last interview with Brandon Finney, he gave me a very nice thank you. They were very sweet.
Well, that was long after the game. We were watching with the end of the Senators and Capitals. That was long after the game.
No, I had a blast out there, but it was disappointing. And I'm curious your guys' opinion on this, watching it from afar. I was very excited to be on the Texas Tech sideline. I thought through all of our prep that they were going to win the game. That was my gut feeling going into it. And the absolute no-show from the offense stunned me a little bit. That was an offense that averaged more than 42.5 points per game and got shut out. Credit Oregon's defense, sure, but I was pretty stunned at how poor Baron Morton played.
Well, that's it. I thought it was the quarterback. I thought it was almost all on the quarterback. But the 42 is deceptive because their defense was so good and turned the ball over. They got the ball in such great starting field position territory. The 42 is a little bit deceptive. I'm shocked they got shut out, obviously. Mm-hmm. I had the under, but I also had Texas Tech money line because I thought that that defense would be the difference in the game, and it turned out it was the Oregon defense that was the difference in the game. Here's a two-part thing. I thought this line would open 3 Indiana. It's 4. I'm obligated, I think, to bet Oregon at 4. However, can we say here, now that we've reached the semifinals, that there's a major coaching advantage for Kurt Cignetti in any game he plays?
I mean, I would say so. I think he's proven himself to be the best coach in the country by a mile. I mean, you even see the way that I thought they out-schemed Alabama. Like, Alabama was playing heavy man. They were going after them. I think, Storby, you had the stat in the rundown today when they tried to blitz our boy Fernando Mendoza. He was great. He was 8-for-8 for 161 yards, 3 touchdowns. So they tried to go man-heavy and send pressure. They were all over it. They were ready for it. So I would say so. And to the point of coaching, and well, I'll ask both of you. Mike, you can answer this first. But I was not impressed with Dan Lanning. Oh, the play calls on fourth down were absolute insanity.
First of all,
part of the reason they were struggling so much was Texas Tech's defense. It was also their decision making.
The weakest part of Lanning's game has always been his game management. Yeah. He cost them games against Washington, I thought, with his game management. Yeah. His fourth down decision making. You knew from the jump that was going to be a game where points were precious. Kick the field goals, man.
Yeah.
Take the points. He went fourth down 9 times. He let Texas. I mean, Texas Tech gets the ball to open the second half. They could go down and take the lead. They shouldn't even be in the game. You could have accused that game should have been 15-0 at half, or 12 to nothing. So I think he struggles. And then I do think there's a little bit of some lack of creativity as well. And to your point, not just the decisions, but maybe some of the play calls against that front four.
You know, like the wildcat power run to the right on a fourth and short. It was ridiculous, Stormy.
Well, and with that in mind, too, like he even said to Katie George in their halftime walk-off interview that, like, some of those decisions he knew were on him and that he should have taken the point. So at least he acknowledged that even in game, which surprised me to an extent, but you're dead on. And especially with how well Texas Tech's defense was playing. And I do want to give that side of the ball credit because they looked like a national championship caliber defense, but their offense could not help them at all and couldn't keep them off the field so that they could catch their breath in this thing. But you're right, at 6-0 at halftime, I fully thought, especially knowing how Texas Tech, because they'd been slow starting in a handful of games this year in the first half, but they always find a way in the third quarter to just get a lead and extend that lead, and they just were not able to do that. For a moment, when they had that long drive and they finally got in the red zone, I was like, for the way that Oregon has just had all these missed opportunities, Texas Tech is going to mess around and win this thing because Oregon's just letting them in. And then, of course, Barron throws the interception in the end zone, and it was kind of all she wrote after that.
Teams with a bye 1-7. Is it time to go to 16 and everybody plays? Everybody has to win 4 games.
So we just talked about this. Oh. I think it's somewhat short-sighted to look at the bigger picture because last year the 4 teams were all underdogs and they were the worst teams that got the byes. I think you're probably using this year as your only barometer. And look, they were 1-3, yeah. So it's not like I have this thing to point to. It's like, no, see, everything's fine. But I do think using all 8 of these scenarios going back to last year, I think we are ignoring the fact that there's a reason why we switched the format, because the lesser teams were the ones that had the byes last year.
Well, even Oregon, it just ran into Ohio State as an 8 seed because they had lost to Michigan.
Right.
Those are my thoughts. I think I like Miami in the other game. I just think they're too physical. I just think they're
very
too
impressive.
Physical on both lines. And Beck has been there and done that. And if you can keep Cristobal out of the game, they'll be fine.
Who do you like to win it all right now?
I think Indiana's the best overall team. And I think Miami will have to play a really good game to beat them if that's what the matchup is. So, I mean, they were the number one team for a reason. And they did go to Oregon and beat them by 8 and threw a pick 6 and beat them by 8. I mean, they actually dominated that game. So, yeah, I would say Indiana.
So, Mike, I want to follow up on Indiana with you because I feel they were the number one team in the country. They were a 7-point favorite against Alabama. And yet I feel like it took that win to really validate them in people's minds, the way that they were talked about. I don't know if they got enough credit for getting the double-digit win at Autzen or being able to pull off the win against that Penn State team and even the Big Ten championship against Iowa State. How much were we talking, JVT, about, well, did Iowa State really pull out all the stops? Were they really showing all their stuff? Like, no one gave Indiana enough credit, I feel like, until now. And now I wonder, with this 4-point spread against Oregon, if maybe they're overvalued a touch.
Well, but the market respected them. 7.5 is a lot of respect.
And it never moved.
Yeah. Right. Yep. I mean, I thought the market respected them. All your brethren there with Disney were all picking Alabama.
Yeah.
Only Desmond Howard with the Big Ten pick of Indiana, right? So, I mean, maybe in the media they didn't get respected, but with the bettors, they certainly got respected.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a fair point. The hook never disappeared. And we saw some of these games. You know, we saw during the day. I don't think you guys ever got to 5.5, but the line for Ole Miss got to 5.5 in a couple of spots during the day. We saw the late move toward Texas Tech. The market did make its opinion known on a couple of these games. And for that one, that got the 7, 7.5, never moved off.
So I like Georgia, and I wouldn't play the game because everybody was betting Mississippi.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. It froze me. It froze me, and I'm glad I passed because it was the opposite of the first game where Georgia stormed back. Here, yep. Mississippi was clearly the best team. Sarmi, before we go, the Olympic rosters got announced for hockey next month in Italy. I wanted to ask if you had any surprises. To me, and this, maybe I'm a bias to my Wild tickets, but Guerin, how does he leave Jason Robertson off this team?
Yep.
How do you leave the top points American off the team? All you do now is create extra motivation for this first round matchup that we're going to get. Stars and Wild, that's written in stone. You're going to have that. And now you leave Robertson off the team. I thought it was a horrific, horrific move. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that is the biggest snub that stood out. I know a lot of people were talking about Adam Fox as well, but Jason Robertson, without a doubt, he is, second most goals by American players right now, second most power play goals, most points, most power play points. The stuff I've heard coming out of their camp is that it's a fit thing, and that, you know, there are other guys ahead of him in the lineup of where we would want to slot him, that it doesn't make sense. I don't understand how it doesn't make sense. If a guy scoring goals and has all these points, why is that not somebody that we want to inject into our lineup? So I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. And you mentioned it, the Bill Guerin tie specifically, that it sets up so well for that to be the first round matchup and for him to be very, very motivated when we get to the NHL postseason.
Were you happy for Logan Thompson? I didn't think he'd be on the roster. He is. What I'm hearing is Bennington was guaranteed a spot, but he's not guaranteed to start.
Okay. See, I didn't know that part of it. That's interesting. But yeah, sure. Happy for him. What do you think of the rosters in general, though? Is Canada going to blow it out again?
It's all about the goaltending, isn't it? I mean, Canada's got to get, they've got to get competent goaltending. I think that's the biggest thing. I actually thought that Wedgwood had played his way into a spot on the team. I know that was a long shot, but I thought that might happen. It didn't happen. Canada is clearly the best team, but they have to be competent in goal.
Yeah, Connor Hellebuck, Jake Ottinger, Jeremy Swayman. Feels like the edge is definitely on the USA side there. But you don't have McDavid.
I agree with all
of this. You don't have McKinnon. Don't have Sidney Crosby. Yeah, you're just an innocent bystander.
Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Mike. You're awesome. You're the best. Mike Palm. Mike Palm Circa. Follow him. All the things. We're going to step aside here on Money Moves. We'll be back in a moment. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We've talked about it a lot already today, but want to continue some of this college football playoff talk because we do have the line set for the semifinals that are going to be coming up next week. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. And with that said, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, all eliminated in the quarterfinals. Those programs, JVT, accounted for 4 of the last 5 national titles. And 3 of the remaining 4 teams in the college football playoff are seeking what would be their first true national championship. Ole Miss does have a share of one going back to 1960. But Miami, the lone true exception here with 5. But even their most recent title was in 2001. How excited are you? And I think just for the college football fandom piece of this at large, just that we have so much new blood coming up.
I mean, I've never been one that kind of got wrapped up in that stuff. These are four really good teams. Miami is obviously very strong along their lines of scrimmage. Their secondary is very, very good. Carson Beck's played in a lot of these games, so we know what that is. I mean, I think you'd argue kind of not the new player at the table, but we've seen Indiana rising. Ole Miss has been pretty good, but I think really of the four, you're probably looking at, as shocking as it sounds, Ole Miss is the redheaded stepchild of the quartet. Only because we just didn't expect it, the turmoil on the staff, everything in between. So I do think that I'm excited. These should be very good games. I wanted to throw this to you because, you know, I know you wanted to bring this up from a power rating standpoint for Indiana. You can't really do this because obviously college basketball is different and the NCAA tournament's a little bit longer. But what are the chances we're watching a UConn-esque run right now by Indiana? And they're about to just crush every single opponent. It's only going to be three games in totality. But what if they're just about to crush everybody they run into right now and they're just a machine?
I could see it, but I also would ask the question, and so this is kind of what we were talking about in the commercial break, that my general curiosity was on Indiana, was the first time that Indiana and Oregon met back in October, Oregon was a 7-point home favorite at Autzen. Yes, Indiana wins that game by double digits, and I know that we have other, you know, points that we can look at on the schedule since of how good Indiana has been. But Oregon's been pretty darn good, too. Is an 11-point or so swing too much on a neutral site a couple months later? Like that's my big question, is just from a numbers standpoint. But you could be correct. And maybe this is a situation where Kurt Cignetti has this team in a certain mode, a certain mindset, where they are not going to be denied. And every time they step out on a football field, they're going to win at margin. They won, 10 of their regular season games this year by double digits or more. And maybe they're peaking at the right time. And Fernando Mendoza wins the Heisman. He has an unbelievable performance when they needed him with the against the blitz, like we were talking about last segment. And the offensive line ends up getting the MVP for the Rose Bowl because of what they did in the run game and how good they were up front. And maybe this is – and how good is their defense, too? There's so many layers to this on Indiana. So I could see it. That said, just from a number standpoint, I look at that four with Oregon, and it does feel attractive to me off the jump.
Yeah, I think, you know, you play the game. If you go down that path, it's okay. Like you said, we were clearly in the wrong when we're talking about the market closing 7 for Oregon. So we adjust to some extent. Indiana has been playing pretty good football. They come into this thing. They've won and covered 3 straight contests, obviously knowing that they are undefeated at this point. You zoom out a little bit farther for Indiana as well, and we're talking about a team that's covered 5 out of the last 7 games. So we have a correction in terms of our original meeting between these two. I think you have a small correction for what we're talking about, where Indiana is at right now and where they're playing. I think you're probably right. You probably still get to a little bit below this number at this point. But I think that this is probably worth laying at this point right now for Indiana. I don't know about you. You were on watching this game. Oregon, I don't think, has been wildly impressive through 2 rounds at this point right now. Mm-hmm. You and I talked last week about the fact that they kind of just let JMU hang around. Obviously, they get inside of the number on a backdoor. They give up 500 total yards there. Then they get Texas Tech. And in that game, it's a disjointed offensive effort where the play calling was abysmal. Dante Moore's taking bad sacks. A game in which they should have been up 23-0 at half. And instead, they're giving Texas Tech chance after chance after chance. This is an Indiana team that will not give you a chance. They will find the matchup. They will exploit it. They will not play with their food, for lack of a better term. And I do wonder from a matchup standpoint, Stormy, when you look at this, one of the things that sticks out, they did it again yesterday. They did it to Julian Sand, and they did it in this matchup months ago. They are good, Indiana is, at generating pressure. They disguise their looks. They go after guys. They sacked Dante Moore 6 times. He was under duress yesterday against Texas Tech. Why would that change here for them as well? I agree with you, or I understand your logic, but I think from a matchup standpoint, man, it is hard to look away from Indiana the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, the sacks and pressure, I think, definitely a concern. I was also texting with Jeff Schwartz yesterday, who's, of course, done a great job doing a lot of work with us here at VSiN, the GM Shuffle podcast, former Oregon Duck and NFL offensive lineman. But I was just like, dude, can you work on the quarterback center exchanges and quarterback running back exchanges? Those are things that are everyday stuff that should be commonplace and just automatic, yet you're having issues with it. And for an offense that we know has the potential to be extremely explosive, when you have a defense that's capable of taking those things away, it creates a different challenge. What I will say about Oregon, though, and seeing them in person, I was extremely impressed with their defense. And it seemed like they took the challenge from the back half of the JMU game when Dan Lanning was getting on him, because you remember that last drive against JMU when it's a 99-yard drive. He takes the starters and puts them back into the game on that one, and they couldn't get a stop late. He really challenged them going into this quarterfinal game, and they showed up. They were awesome. I mentioned it earlier, and you can say that the Texas Tech offense was fugazi if you want to. I don't think so. I think they were a good offense, and they got embarrassed yesterday. An absolute no-show on their behalf, but a big part of that was because of how well Oregon's defense played. They did have four takeaways, and Brandon Finney in that secondary was phenomenal. But yes, like Baron Morton gave them the football. That interception, yeah, in the end zone was so bad.
It was so bad.
All of this to say, I think Oregon's defense is very good, and they kind of took this bleep you mentality from the JMU game into it.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, one of the things that we had covered this, you know, in the days that you weren't here, and I think I mentioned this to you too, when you really got under the hood on Texas Tech's offense, the thing that really stuck out was down to down, they were not an efficient offense throughout the year. They were heavily reliant on explosive plays. And I think some of what we saw yesterday was the discrepancy in strength of schedule that, mm-hmm, everybody kept talking about. In the Big 12, you can have an offense that's very reliant on generating explosive plays. And even look at yesterday, Stormy, when you're on that sideline, what were some of the most successful drives for Texas Tech? It was the drives in which they generated some explosives. The big run where there was a missed tackle where he ripped, I can't remember which kid it was, but rips it off for like 50 yards, they get to midfield. A big pass down the right sideline that gets them down into that goal-to-go situation. But every other down was so awful, and that was kind of what they were all season long, which is magnified, and you can get away with that in the Big 12. You can't get away with it if you're playing a team like Oregon, who's a very good defensive team. You mentioned the turnovers. I believe it was two fumbles, two interceptions, two abysmal interceptions at that, like you're saying, where you're misreading the coverage. You've got like that weird slant and then corner route concept, and you don't see the fact that the DB is just dropping off the slant and saying, no, like, I'm just going to double cover this guy because you're looking at that direction, and you completely pick him off in the corner of the end zone. I don't want to take away credit from Oregon, and I'm going to. I thought a lot of that was about Texas Tech yesterday. I thought Texas Tech was making mistakes. I thought their weaknesses showed in, dude, a very big way. And I think I still have my reservations as to what Oregon actually is when they run into this matchup against Indiana.
I felt so bad for our audience because of how much I was hyping up Baron Morton's health. Because that was such a big conversation with the coaching staff about how different he looked and how dialed in he was for this game.
And
I thought that it was going to make it. Dude, I thought it was going to make a difference in the down-to-down stuff. I thought it was going to make a difference in the red zone, and it was just an absolute no-show. That said, last couple minutes here, can we switch gears over to that Miami-Ole Miss game briefly? Because my biggest question with Miami, who we just heard last segment from Mike Palm say that he likes in this game, is if it's a close game or late in this game and you're trailing, which quarterback do you trust? Is it Carson Beck? Or is it freaking Trinidad Chambliss? And I think that might be my answer when all is said and done. I feel like I'm leaning toward the dogs in both of these things.
Yeah, I mean, so you and I are going to be at odds here because I like both the favorites. And I think one of the things that might make a difference.
This is good for programming.
It is, and I think one of the big differences here that Ole Miss is going to run into, Georgia, it does not have the pass rush that Miami has. Miami has a very dangerous combination of pass rushers and a defensive backfield that can stick with almost any wide receiver group in the country. I mean, look what they just did to Carnell Tate. Did he even play in that game the other night? I mean, they were brilliant in that game against Ohio State. Then you add the ability to pressure Trinidad Chambliss to get after him, I think, at a much higher level than what Georgia could do. I think Miami is very impressive here along the lines of scrimmage. And let's not forget, Stormy, for the last two games, all of a sudden, they've been an efficient rushing attack. They ran the ball really well against Texas A&M. They ran the ball very well against Ohio State. You're kind of seeing these fingerprints of Cristobal along these lines of scrimmage, and everything, mm-hmm, else is taking care of itself. I like Miami. I think you've got a national ticket on them as well to win this championship. We're going to keep riding our horse here. I think Miami is the side. I think they're going to get it done.
Well, that's why I don't think I'm going to end up playing it either, because we both have been very pro Miami for this whole run.
Oh, we're absolutely
and the fact
betting
that our
Ole Miss.
The fact that our, yeah, ticket was still alive as a 9.5-point dog in the opening round. Let's go. We're just living in the clouds right now. Good times. Okay, we got to step aside. I mentioned earlier, I'm doing my best Dave Ross impression today, being out here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Well, guess what? He's going to join us in studio.
Is he?
Coming up next. He might actually already be right next to me. It's entirely possible. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. More Money Moves right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Man, we got the NFL postseason upon us. College football playoff going on right now. Such a fun time to be a bettor, especially when you think about the NBA, the NHL, everything going on. And the all-new Boomer Sportsbook is right here, keeping you involved in all the action. And get this, when you use our code VSIN250 at sign up for the Boomer's mobile account, they're going to match that first deposit for you up to $250 in bonus bets. Plus, minus 105 on all pro football spreads every single game the rest of the way. Download the Boomer Sportsbook app today. BetWithBoomer.com for more information. Must be 21 or older. Terms and conditions do apply. Please bet responsibly. Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. JVT out in our usual studio in Las Vegas. Meanwhile, I'm out here in Franklin, Kentucky with the man, the myth, the legend, Dave Ross, who's been holding it down out here for months. How are you, buddy?
Stormy, it's great to have you out here. Had Matt Eumanns out a couple weeks ago, and he's the biggest VSiN star to date. Now, you have trumped Matt Eumanns.
I don't think that's
by
true.
By doing the Impossible. First show here. Nobody else besides me has done a show. Me and Jensen have done it. But to host the show, you are the first. We're going to get all that. We're going to get JVT out here. Mitch and Paul said they want to come out for the Kentucky Derby. We say, come on out, check it out. What do you think?
This is beautiful. JVT, I've told you this, and especially even from our standpoint, just from a logistical broadcast stuff, the TVs we get,
this setup's better than Vegas.
Is unbelievable. but I think we should. We need to do a team field trip, JVT. Get out here.
I mean, I don't know about that. I would quibble with that. I think I like staring into lights as I'm trying to watch televisions, Dave. So I think that there's an argument to be made that this is way better.
JVT, we don't do this on Sundays
no
at all.
Glare. It's
no.
So
we don't
beautiful.
Do this on Sunday at all.
There's and
no
there's the hidden surprise of a whole row of TVs behind those lights that nobody really knows about because we can't see them. So, but no, yes, I will make a trip. Maybe we can convince our bosses. We'll find a weekend a week that we'll go out there. We can do some shows because that'll be a ton of fun. I'll be down.
Yeah, that's a true story. I didn't know that the third row of TVs existed.
Didn't know it existed until probably just now. JVT, I don't know if you watched this morning. I'm sure you get up and watch before you guys do Money Moves, and you watch me and Jensen every day by the books. And we did recount for everybody out there for the first ever NFL Futures Draft. My first pick, which was the second pick overall, Stormy, you were third in the said draft. I picked Dak Prescott to lead the league in passing yards. If that happens and Seattle beats your Niners tomorrow night, I will win the first ever VSiN football futures
You'll
contest.
You'll leapfrog humans?
I will
no
beat Matt
way.
Humans. That is in fact. And then JVT would have to eat his words, which were, I do believe if I quote accurately, worst pick in the draft when I took Dak Prescott to lead the league in passing.
I think my words were, that's the worst pick I've ever
Pull
seen.
The tape.
Yeah, no. Come on, now. Let me actually state my quote there first. I won't back down. Look, process over results, Dave. I think we do this all the time in the NFL draft as well. A guy that you can get in the third round, even if he becomes a Hall of Famer, if you take him in the first round, it's a bad pick, my friend.
We're going to agree to disagree on that, and let's hope that Dak, they play him long enough to get that ticket home at plus 850, and then if Seattle can beat San Francisco, big if. I will win this contest.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go to the Saturday doubleheader. Do you have an opinion? I know, obviously, your Seahawks ticket is in the balance, so maybe not making a bet on the side in this one. But whether it's Seahawks 49ers or Panthers Falcons, any strong opinions?
Yeah, I'm stunned that the Niners are underdogs. I know that it's flipped, and obviously they opened up as the small favorite. To me, I get it that their defense is not on par with Seattle's right now, but I think you can make the case that San Francisco's offense right now could be the best in the NFL. Forget about the NFC. And you know this, obviously, if they win and they could then potentially host all the way to the Super Bowl being in Santa Clara, that's motivation in and of itself. So I do have a little bit of, I'd say, a phobia that Sam Darnold's going to do exactly what he did this time last year. And I was sitting on a Vikings ticket at 11-1 to win the North last year. And, of course, we saw what happened against the Lions in that last regular season game. I hope that's not the Sam Darnold we see tomorrow. You hate putting it all on him. But he's going to have to, if the Niners' offense is humming as well as it is, you're going to have to probably score 28-30 to have a realistic shot to win this thing.
I mean, it can be done, right? We saw the Rams do it on that Thursday night. Matt Stafford picked this Seahawks defense apart. So if you're well-schemed enough, you can get after them. Let me ask you, Dave, I mean, of the whole entire board, there's a lot of noise here. But the games that matter, we have the AFC North up for grabs at the end of the night on Sunday. Yep. And then we have a big one that Stormy's going to be rooting for with the Buccaneers and the Carolina Panthers. Do you dare incite some ill will in that room and go the other way?
I do, JVT. I'm not trying to do this because I know that you and Stormy, when you're back together in Vegas, and I don't want to do that here in Kentucky with Stormy.
I thought we were going to bond.
I know. But... I like the Bucks in this one. Look, Tristan Wirfs might be the most indispensable player they have. They didn't have him last week. They lost again. You got to hope that he's going to be okay. Yes, you get all the wide receivers back. Baker Mayfield is not healthy. We all get that. It's up to 3. I did play it at 2.5 earlier in the week. I just liked it that it was under a field goal. Now at a field goal price, I do think it's potentially the type of game that Tampa Bay knows they're going to need some help. They're going to have the Falcons lose to the Saints. Now without Chris Olave, it might not even matter this game. But I think for their part, Tampa Bay will do their part tomorrow. And this 7-8 game losing skid that they're on right now, I do think Todd Bowles is coaching for a job, which is kind of ridiculous with all the success he's had there in Tampa Bay. I do like the Bucs to get by this, but that does not mean that they're going to win this division.
Lost 7 of 8 straight up, as you mentioned, but also failed to cover all 8 of those.
Unbelievable.
They're the worst ATS team in the NFL this season. Just 1-6 ATS at home, and you're like, yeah, I'm doing it.
I think they're going to put a big number on Carolina.
Oh, no!
It doesn't sound like a lot of success for your boy Todd Bowles, though, I've got to tell you.
Yeah,
he better win this game, at least do their part, and then see what happens between Atlanta and New Orleans. And again, Tyler Shuck, we talked about on our program at 250-1. I thought it was a pizza money bet to be made out there. Now he's the second betting choice with Ted Rota McMillan to win Rookie of the Year. I think he's got something to play for. So if the Bucs can do their part, I do think they're going to get at least a willing participant. The Saints won't lay down.
Yeah, that is an interesting wrinkle for anybody who doesn't know how it all plays out with the Bucs and Panthers result. Even if the Bucs win that game, it doesn't mean they've won the NFC South.
That's right.
It's going to come down to the Falcons and Saints. And if the Falcons win that game, then the Panthers will still win it because they own the tiebreakers, which is just a whole crazy thing.
I tell you this, though, guys. The game I think I like the best is the Steelers. This is insane. I know Lamar Jackson's back. And, you know, I made the bet independent of knowing who the quarterback was going to be. I assumed it would be Lamar Jackson. But, you know, it's kind of like in The Wire with Omar. What's the word on the street with Omar? The word on the street right now with Lamar Jackson is defenses prefer that he runs. That's how crazy the upside down world right now is with the Ravens offense.
Speaking of which, I do need to finish Stranger Things. Got to watch the finale.
He's more dangerous as a passer now, and Huntley can't throw. So I think, to me, Lamar's going to have to beat the Steelers with his arm versus his legs. And this is the type of game exactly why Mike Tomlin got Aaron Rodgers. Whatever you think of that pairing in Pittsburgh, this is the reason why they went and got old man Aaron. And he loves this. You guys know this. His ego... He loves this, that they're an underdog at home, week 18. They're going to play a renegade before the fourth quarter. I really like the Steelers here to actually win this game outright and win this division.
Any concern with some of the pass catchers he's not going to have available to him?
I think he actually likes Gainwell more than he does DK Metcalf. Look, if they make it and they get to the second season and get DK back, obviously that's a guy you have to allot for. You're going to see a lot of check down stuff to Gainwell. They chipped with Gainwell last week against Myles Garrett. They're not going to have to do that this week against the Ravens, which they do not have a great pass rush. I like Gainwell out of the backfield. I think he's going to be a big player, big key in this machine. And I just trust Aaron Rodgers more than I do an unhealthy Lamar Jackson at this point.
All right, let's transition over to the college football before we get you out of here, Dave, because I got to get your thoughts. We obviously now have our semifinals set. I made the comp. Can Indiana be UConn from a few years ago? Are they just going to romp through this tournament and smoke everybody in their path? What do you think?
I was on the wrong side, JVT, yesterday of betting against Kurt Cignetti, and I don't think I'm going to make the same mistake again. Right after the game, I played it at 4.5. It is down to 4 in some spots, so you're getting the better of the number here. I know you saw Oregon up close and personal. I know their defense played really, really well. Their offense, to me, is still challenged. And I saw Indiana break the will of Alabama to the tune of their worst postseason loss, bowl, playoff, you name it, in the history of Alabama football. He is a football assassin, Cignetti. He's criminal-minded in the best way for football sense. I think he wants to put a number on Oregon, show you the first time that we went to Eugene was not a fluke. Mendoza's playing so much better than he was back then. I love this Indiana team in this spot here, and I do think that they might be taking on Ole Miss for the national championship.
Okay, so that's what I was going to say. That's the Peach Bowl, Fiesta Bowl. We've got Ole Miss and Miami going head-to-head. You like them as a dog to win it outright?
I do. I worry about them defensively a little bit in that. But I heard you talking about Trinidad right now. I don't know that there's a quarterback I'd trust more than him, that kid right there. You knew when Georgia kicked the field goal last night, guys, And I saw 58 seconds. This game's over. You know he's going to go down there and
I
put them in
position.
I saw
you tweeting about some of the decision-making, by the way, from Kirby Smart.
What was that? How do you not run the ball and at least play for overtime if you can't get the six? I could not believe that was his decision.
It's a crazy scenario.
It is.
What else do you have going on today?
I don't know. You guys are superstars in town with you and Chris around, so I might try to get down to Nashville tomorrow and see you guys.
You and my husband have already hit the machines out here.
JVT, that's why we were late for the segment. We're here checking out the slot machine. No table games here, but big on the slots.
Be a professional and do what I do and lose your money before the show, okay?
That's what I was attempting to do.
Dave Ross, everybody. If you haven't checked out VSiN by the Books, you are missing out. Each and every morning, he and Jensen Lewis absolutely crushing it here on VSiN. We got to step aside. When we come back, though, JVT and I, let's give our thoughts on the Saturday marquee games in the National Football League. I've got a slight difference of opinion from the guy to my left.
Interesting.